Welcome to A Load of Old Toffee. It's been a long time, but joining me today, we've got Mark Hollis and Dean Thompson, of course. Afternoon, chaps.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Got somebody else with us as well today.
Who's that, Steve?
Sitting to our left-hand side, we've got Graham Wesley joining us. Good afternoon, Graham.
Steve, always a pleasure, never a chore.
Welcome back to Stevenage. Is it too late to say that?
No, it sounds brilliant to be back in the old town, back here at the Cromwell, doing a bit for the town. This football club's a really special place to me. It's been 17 years nearly since I first stepped in the door, and I've had so many great experiences over the course of that 17 years, and I've met so many people who still bring a massive smile to my face. And I kind of knew when I came back for Ronnie's testimony in the summer that I wasn't done with the place. I knew that I was nearly at the 500 mark myself in terms of games managed. And I just seeing the faces and getting the buzz of being back in the place and seeing the North Stand there, I just knew I had to get back and finish off something. It didn't feel right last time around, leaving in the way I did. And I'm looking forward to being back. And it's even though the results haven't started off great, I'm sure we'll get ourselves winning before long and get ourselves in the position we want to be in.
Mark and Dean, obviously been a long time. I know I've been to a lot of games. You, Dean?
Yeah, I've been to a lot of games in the last 4 years, yeah.
Mark, you?
No, I've been keeping a low profile, haven't I?
Why?
It's difficult to say with him in the room, isn't it? I didn't like it. I didn't like the way it went.
Put a smile on his face.
I thought it was disrespectful, and I don't think we handled it very well at all, and I don't think it should have happened. And I don't think we've done an awful lot correct since that point.
Seriously, I'm going to be serious here with you, Mark. Is that the genuine reason that you've
the same thing that when you stop doing something regularly that it's difficult to start doing it again. But yeah, that is a massive reason. You know, it's this. You know, we've all been through bits in the past. Mainly me that have said, you know, if such and such a thing happens, I'm not going to go to the football. I'm not going to do whatever else. I just haven't really said it this time around. I've not been impressed with an awful lot that's gone on at the club in the last few years, and I'm frankly not. I haven't really been willing to stick my money into it, if I'm honest.
All going to change now, though. Got new manager. A new manager? Back for the fourth time. A Luke's back. How about that?
I didn't think I'd see this day.
No.
Lovely,
you two in a room together.
I know. I didn't think he'd be able to work in a room with me again, but
Mark,
there we are.
It's only a badge.
It is only a badge. It's an absolutely terrible badge, but it is only a badge.
And look what I'm wearing for you, just for you today.
I know. And I appreciate it.
The old badge.
But anyway, it's not to be negative. We don't need to be negative, do we? We don't need to talk about the past too much.
Have you got any games for us today?
There is a game today.
Is there?
There is a game today that I'm going to ask Graham if he wants to play, because I've learnt from the past that you don't tell Graham he's playing games.
Is it from his era?
It's from one of his eras.
We've got no chance, because I know he'll run for any team.
I couldn't ask Graham what the team was that Teddy Sheringham picked, if Teddy Sheringham picked it. I don't believe he probably picked most of those players we had playing for Ascendity. Can't imagine it was Teddy. But I have got a new game that, should this podcast continue and evolve over the next however many months,
right?
There is a new game.
Ooh, it's what, in the planning stage?
It's in the early stages, but
you'll fine tune it.
Oh yeah, I've not come up with a theme tune for it yet. It's but
I'll
yes,
write that. I'll write the theme tune.
Okay, you'd go ahead and do the theme tune. But yes, we do have a Steve and Dean guess the team of a game what happened years ago.
I mean, not obviously. Graham, back. We've seen a lot of football together.
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed it? Have you been enjoying it? I know. We're talking on the back.
We've had patches, haven't we? Where there wasn't a patch under Teddy. We had a good patch under Darren, where we went on and almost got into the playoffs. That Portsmouth game at home probably was a high point. We had a great end of season last season with Dino. I think on the last day of the season we were level on points with the teams in the playoffs during the game, weren't we, and finished a point short. So yeah, but
It's been some hard work, isn't it?
It has been some hard work. We've had some long journeys home, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking on the back of...
They were just the home games.
That was just sitting with him.
Obviously talking on the back of the last few games, and Graham coming out after the last one and just saying you two need to cheer up a bit.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with us, was he, on New Year's Day?
Was it that obvious, Graham?
You know, when you get a struggling side, a side that's not getting results, there's going to be reasons for that. And it's never going to be click your fingers and by magic everything changes. You get 4 games in 9 days, which we're in the midst of right now. And there's not a lot you can do between games, realistically, to make a lot of a difference to a side. But what I think about this squad is that there is a platform there. There is a base, a foundation. There is something to work with. There's some missing ingredients. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But it's not as if you need to reinvent the wheel to get this squad winning football matches. And I think there's a tweak here, a tweak there, maybe an addition here, an addition there. And I think we can realistically expect to get some wins under our belt. I don't think we're a million miles away. And that's kind of what I was saying to you after the game the other day. It isn't as... it's not as downbeat as you might think it is. 2013, when I came back, I was really worried. You know, I did my best to put a positive face on things, but I was really worried. I wasn't confident in what I was working with. With this group, I've got a lot more confidence. I think that there's some really good characteristics there. There's some very good players at the club, and we just haven't quite got the right mix of ingredients. Some of that's obvious, but it's not going to take a lot to add an ingredient or two. It might even be that, you know, the lads required are within the camp, and I've just got to like knock them into the right shape or get them thinking of playing in the right way to make a difference. So I'm of course I feel urgent about the situation the club's in, but I feel quite relaxed that the solution's there.
Does the thought of relegation frighten you?
Yeah, it terrifies me. It'd be stupid to say anything otherwise. You know, I've come back to put my neck on the line. I was the manager who led the club into the Football League. It took me, 5 years of work with the football club in 2 different spells to get into the Football League. We dug our way out of trouble in my first spell at the bottom end of the conference, and that wasn't easy. Mm. And then we got into the playoff final 2005. Didn't get there, messed up in the final against Carlisle. I lost my job after coming sick the following season, which I still put down to the dreadful start we made after losing the playoff final. I didn't deal with that summer very well at all. 2008, obviously the semi-finals, and then finally in 2009-10 we cracked it, won the league title and we went up. So we put a lot of work into getting into the Football League, and it terrifies me, the idea that we would throw that away. And be back in the National League. I don't really do terror. I just focus on the job that needs doing. I need to get players in the side in the 11 shirts, in the 14 shirts that go on the pitch on any given day, who are going to put in the type of shift that we would all expect. We all know our football, we all know what it takes to succeed, we all know what it takes to win, and we have to leave performances behind from anybody who wants to put less than a winning performance into the shirt. So irrespective of what colour the shirt is or whether the badge is right or wrong, I just need to make sure that the hearts that I put into the shirt are the ones that we'd all want to watch, because in the end, we're all passionate football people, we all love winning sides, we all love people who go the extra inch, we like people who do more, not less, and that's all we want to see in the shirt.
And are those 11 players currently within the squad that you've got?
You can't have had much time with them. 4 in 9, as you say. You haven't been on the training ground very much.
No, I've not had a great amount of time with the players on the training ground. I've not had a lot of time to get to know all the players in depth. I've had to take a lot of recommendations on players. He can do this, he can do that. I've had to make some guesstimates of what people may or may not be able to do in terms of selection and tactics. So, you know, you sometimes as a manager, you get that bounce factor where you come in and, you know, you're like a bounce factor manager. You suddenly get a great performance or two. But I've always tended to be someone who doesn't really get that bounce. I've always tended to be someone who comes in, takes a look at what's there and gradually works out the answer. And you know, step by step and day by day, starts to feel more able to do a job with the players at his disposal. And you know, it's clear, isn't it? We've conceded too many late goals across the season, so there's clearly a conditioning issue of some sort. So I need to resolve that. It's clear that the side has been able to produce clean sheets more than it's been able to dirty other people's nets. So, you know, we know that there's more attacking ingredients required, or we need to bring more out of the attacking ingredients that we've got. So I think having, you know, a better sense of attacking organisation, having players who are better understood, who better understand each other, is going to be a bonus when it comes to our attacking play. But I do think there might be one or two attacking ingredients that we need to add.
Is that likely to be a January thing, do you think? Is there a plan for that? Or?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I think we'll probably see something happen, you know, as soon as after the weekend. And you'll probably see a couple more things happen as the weeks go by. But I want to make sure I get the right players. I don't want to get people in just for the hell of it. You can panic a bit. When you're at the bottom, you can panic and make the wrong moves. And I'd sooner make sure that we get the right players in who are going to make a sustained difference to us. And that, you know, that's good not only for those lads who come in and have got that fresh enthusiasm to bring, but it's good for the lads who are there who are putting in really good shifts and who probably need that little bit of extra help to get the results that many of their performances deserve. I said to you afterwards, I really did genuinely feel for the players at Plymouth, and I genuinely felt for the players the other day at Northampton, because there was a lot of good work went in to getting the positions we were in the 95th and 93rd minutes in both those games. And we didn't need to concede the two goals that threw away the 2 points that we'd arguably earned over 90 minutes. So it's important now that we've got, you know, we just add one or two that can bring us, you know, a little bit more goal threat, a little bit more conversion of our play into goals that can punish the opposition. And I don't think it's you know, beyond the realms that we can start getting consistent winning together. I don't feel as though the side's a massive amount away.
Oh, sorry, Steve, before you ask, we've had some questions in from fans. I don't want to just do a sort of a quick fire round, but this one sort of fits in with the theme of where we are. Nick Wilson asked, how much football at our sort of level did you watch while you were out of the game, and do you feel as clued up on Conference League 2's players as you were perhaps 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think if you're going to go back into football at any sort of level, if you're going to leave that door open for yourself, then you've always got to do your homework when you're out. There's no better time to do your homework. You can watch a lot of games, you can see a lot of players. So I feel well equipped to find the answers to our dilemma. I watch a lot of football across a lot of levels, you know, particularly at higher levels. I watch a lot of Premier League football, some Champions League football, a lot of Championship football. But I saw football down at the levels that are relevant to us, whether that be 23s football or whether that be, you know, Football League action in League 1 and League 2. So I know my way around football, and I think in this day and age you've got the added advantage of the technology that, you know, can bring you very close to players very quickly. If you get an inkling, you watch a player in a 23s game, you can have 20 games worth of footage within 5 minutes, and you know, that's the scenario that you live in. So it's much easier to track players nowadays, but there isn't anything like the real thing. And I think you'll see as we start making one or two additions that I've been fairly active in making sure that I know what I'm up to.
Squad's very big at the moment, isn't it? 34, 35
Yeah, way
players?
Too big, way too big, yeah.
What would be your kind of ideal optimum number?
19, 21 perhaps. We've never worked with big squads here. Mm. You haven't got the luxury of having reserve football, 23s football even, for these lads to play. And footballers want to play football. So if you've got 35 players, it's way, way too many to keep players happy. And as Sir Alex Ferguson has always said all of his life, it's not a manager's job to keep players happy, it's players' job to keep managers happy. But if you can't give footballers football because you've got 35 of them and you can only pick 11, there's 24 people feeling aggrieved every weekend when you don't pick them, and it's way too many to keep a camp focused, to keep them on the same page, to keep them motivated in their day-to-day life. They want to be playing football. So I think it's really, really important that we get a lot of lads out there getting some experience as soon as we possibly can in Jan. I'd much rather see, you know, young developmental prospects out there playing in non-league games, getting experience as men in men's football, playing for a win bonus here or a win bonus there, playing for points in the league. I'd much sooner see that than have loads of players on the training ground. And it's really important to me that we do narrow it down and get ourselves a focused group, even if at times that leaves us slightly light. You know, we might have to put 17 in the match day squad, but I can only use 14 anyway. So I think sometimes you worry too much about having a full complement of players, and you ignore the fact that you bring, you know, disquiet into a camp by having too many players around, and you lose a bit of focus. So it's really going to be important in Jan that we do slim things down.
With that in mind, you're talking about 15 odd players, and that's not including bringing anybody in. So there's going to be a fair bit of to-ing and fro-ing.
Yeah, well, it's not so much to-ing and fro-ing. I'm sure that a lot of the younger players will be delighted just to, you know, get positioned with a non-league club and go and play some football. It's what they need. So it's not so much to-ing and fro-ing. It's not giving up on them either. I've seen some really good talent. You know, I've walked in the door and found some really, really good talent. Lads, I'm sure will play a lot of good football for the club in the future, but it's just right here, right now, they need to play games. They're not going to be progressing and developing and improving as players if they're sitting around on a Saturday afternoon getting frustrated. So we need to get them out, get them playing, and that's what I'll be aiming to do.
So is there a change in philosophy then, do you think, at sort of chairman's level? We've seen in regimes gone by that some of these young kids have come through from undoubtedly players that probably will go on to have good football careers, that maybe have been pushed in or dropped into starting 11s that perhaps they don't really have much right being in.
I'm not sure there's going to be a change in philosophy. I think the investment that's gone into the academy at the club is huge. The club has been, you know, recruiting heavily throughout all the age groups, been developing players that are coming through, that are earning professional contracts, that are coming into the first team. I think, you know, you see at clubs like Chelsea where, you know, I know we're talking about a completely different level, but they've got that investment in the academy and then they buy big at first team level, and they leave no room for the Hudson-Odois of this world to, you know, earn their stripes, for the Tammy Abrahams to get their minutes, for the Mason Mounts to get their minutes. And you're talking about lads who are England internationals because they've been given their chance. So I think you've got to be a good judge of when your young players are ready, but you've got to make sure when they are ready, there's a squad for them to come in where they have got a use, where they have got a purpose. You don't want them queuing up behind experienced senior lads if they're going to be given a chance. You saw with Ben Wilmot, you know, the club made a lot of money from selling Ben Wilmot because they gave him first team football. And you know, part of the philosophy of the club has to be invest in the academy, develop academy prospects, and then look to create a future business by selling those players on. It's how clubs like Stevenage can prosper, can thrive. So a big part of the agenda is going to be doing that. I think it's about leaving much more room and having much more trust in their ability to progress. There's definitely boys there that, you know, if I didn't have senior players queuing up ahead of them, would be worth giving a chance to. I really do. I've been really impressed with someone like Arthur Ironton as a centre-back. He might not be quite ready for the Football League as a centre-back, but, you know, given a chance, that kid can defend. He's got a good voice, he's a good organiser, he's willing, he puts his body on the line. He's not going to get in ahead of Scott Cuthbert, he's not going to get in ahead of Nugent right now, but he's a prospect there. Yeah. I don't see him necessarily being a central midfield player, but I do see him having a chance playing in his right position. But what he needs right now, he needs to get out there, go and get some experience, go and prove himself at a level, and then he can build on that. So how we bring them through might be slightly different, but no, not as a basic philosophy. I just think leave more room for them at first team level is where we need to be.
Looking at the youth setup as well, I mean, how far down do you go as a manager when you're starting to have a look? Because this, obviously, the under-18s have performed very well again in the FA Youth Cup and in the league this season, but they've got a lot of under-16s in that side, and I'm told that under-16 side that's coming through, there's some special players in there, and it's going to be a real good side to watch. Do you go that far down?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think you only need to see, you know, when I was at Preston, I had a lad, Lee Holmes, who I think made his debut for Derby when he was 15. You know, my boy's in the Fulham Academy, and, you know, they've got the boy who went to Liverpool who made his debut last year in the Premier League. So I think if you look at the clubs that are successful with their academies, they don't have any rules about, you know, needing to be old enough to be good enough. They work on the basis that if you're good enough, give them a chance, you know, see where they're at. Of course, you've got to be careful about how quickly you push them from a physical perspective, and you don't want to break players mentally by giving them bad experiences too early. So you've got to be very measured. But I think as a football club, we're a this has always been a very intelligent football club. I think there's a, within the fan base, there's a ton of passion, there's a great spirit, but there's also a really good intelligence. They kind of take time to understand where you're coming from as a manager, and they take time to understand, you know, if you take a chance with a young boy, and it works well, great. And then they kind of like, they don't build expectations up too soon. Look at me with Kennedy. I had to play Kennedy, maybe leave Kennedy out. Everyone's saying, what's he doing leaving him out? But they understood that, well, he's leaving him out because he can see that he's maybe getting ahead of himself here, or maybe physically he might just be struggling a bit. So you've got to manage young players in the right way and give them what they need at any given moment. But I think that's the beauty of this club, is that there is an intelligence there that, you know, enables you as a manager to work with the club and get that understanding.
What's the secret with Ben Kennedy? What's the secret of Ben Kennedy? No one else seems to have known what to do with him or how to get the best out of him.
I think you're back a week and he's putting his two best performances.
Well, he's a simple, to me, he's a very simple person. He's got a point of view. he's present. You know, if he doesn't like it or agree with it, and he wants to have his say, but I don't see that as a negative thing. I see that as a constructive thing. I see that as him caring. I see it as him wanting the team to do better. And I guess I'm not really scared of challenge. If somebody wants to challenge me in the way I'm doing it, or the way I'm asking them to play, or what I'm asking them to do, I see that as healthy. I'd have been that person. I'd have wanted to have a point of view if I didn't like what the manager was saying. So I just think give him respect. He can listen, and he will listen if you talk to him in the right way. Give him respect to be a grown up about his football, and you know, he's a very ambitious and very determined character, and I like having ambitious, determined characters around me. I think as a great friend of mine once said to me, employ people smaller than yourself and you become a company of dwarves. Employ people bigger than yourself, become a company of giants. And I think,
got any jobs going?
you need big people around you if you're going to get anywhere. You look at our best sides together, there's been some huge characters in those sides, and you know, big characters are intelligent enough. Ben's intelligent enough to respect his teammates, to respect his manager, but he's also the type who will want to have his say, and I guess that can ruffle people's feathers.
I'd love to be in a room with you and Ben Kennedy. Those conversations, they must be interesting.
Like we've just said it. I mean, you know, we had a tear up this morning about a corner.
You and him?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, he wants to. You know, he's got his own ideas on how he wants things to go. And I've got my ideas now. I want things to go, and you know, you've got to bring yourselves together. And I think, you know, that's the problem sometimes, is that you know, the win is the team getting the right result, and I'm not too fussed whether it's my way or his way. As long as we get a result that we can convert into points, then that's the most important thing. And I think, you know, sometimes you know, you've just got to respect that in somebody else. If they're a strong character, they're going to want to have enough of their own way, or they're not going to feel like they want to belong. And if you want players like Ben to belong, then you've got to give them room to be themselves.
What I'm taking from that, though, is that it's 11 men behind a ball at a corner.
No, not at all.
that'll upset Boise, won't it?
Here we go.
Listen, even Guardiola has 11 men behind the ball at a corner. So,
I wasn't disagreeing with it. I just want to know what to expect for my return tomorrow.
If it's good enough for Pep.
No. If we don't concede a goal from our own corner on 94 minutes, you can have as many men behind the ball as you want, mate.
Yeah, cheers, Dean. thanks for coming, Dean.
Going back to what you were saying.
Is that reception on the line?
And you've got rooms to be booking.
Going back to what you were saying, that you were full of praise for the players for the last couple of games or whatever. Would that be the case in 6 months' time?
No, and do you know what? I said to them after the game the other day, as much as I'm full of praise for you, we just lost the game. So, you know, don't think that, you know, my sort of gratitude for some really hard-working performances is me saying that's okay, because it isn't. We'll all be out of jobs in the summer if we don't knuckle down and do more than we did. And, I could take, you know, frames from the game the other day and show an attacking phase where, you know, Northampton had an overload, and 60 seconds later a defensive phase where they also had an overload. And, you know, I want to know
what's happened to my side in the meantime? How have we got overloaded at one end of the pitch and then got overloaded at the other end of the pitch? That says to me there's more legwork going in from them than there is for us. Maybe a deeper desire from them than us. So as much as I can say, well, we're nearly there, we've got to push as individuals and a collective. We've got to push for more because we're not quite there. And when you're not quite there, you've got to do more. So I'm not in any way complacent about what I'm saying, and I'm certainly not becoming tolerant of substandard performances. What I am saying is there's moments in a game where I can see with not a lot of work we will become a lot better. There might be certain crossing situations that we develop where we're putting balls in the box right now, but we're not putting them in an organised way. So the runs in the box are not constructed to arrive where the crosses are constructed to arrive. You don't get as much out of them as you will down the line. So I can look at bits of detail that we can add to our game and think, well, by the time I've got that 5 or 6 bits of detail, and that 6 or 7 bits of detail, and that 8 or 9 bits of detail, and that 10 or 11 bits of detail into the team, we'll be a much better team. So some of it is just detail and organisation. I know I can get in there and I know we'll be a lot better. So I say the margins are fine. We've got to get the margins on the right side. And I'm certainly, in giving them some credit for what they're doing, not in any way accepting that that's okay. If they think that going down the road I'm going to be saying, well done for another defeat, then I think even the lads know that that's not who they're dealing with.
And if we're talking about the playing side of things, I guess you've also got to look at your backroom staff as well. Are you happy with what you've got there? Are there going to be changes there? Are you going to bring anybody else in? Or
well, my remit, my promise to the chairman and my remit was to look at everything that's in place with an open mind, with no prejudice, with no bias, and determine where everything was at from a playing point of view, from a management point of view. Look at everything that's in place, assess it, guide it, give people a fair chance to step up to the plate if in some way I felt they were lacking. But in the end, you know the chairman as well as I do, he's a very proud person. He's not in football to be at the bottom of a league, and he wants the club to be winning. So as much as he's saying to me, be fair to everybody, be open minded with everybody, be prepared to look at everybody as a part of the solution, he's also saying, get me to winning quick, because I don't like this. This isn't what I'm in this for. I take a great pride in my football club, and I take a great pride in my football club's results. So iron it out. I trust you to iron it out. I know you know what winning looks like. Get in there, identify the changes and make the changes. So I'm going through that process. As you say, it's really difficult when you've got 4 games so quickly in a 9-day spell, and then we've got the Bristol Rovers game coming shortly afterwards. So it's very difficult to assess everything. But every day I'm assessing. Every day I'm trying to guide. Every day I'm trying to assess improvement from people or not. And I've got to make quick decisions. So as we get through this sort of new year period, you can expect that by the middle of January I really will be starting to make some changes where I feel they're needed, because we can't carry on down the same road.
Clearly there's still a massive respect between you and Phil. Is there all the stuff that's gone on in the past, is that from your point of view everything's forgiven and forgotten? Is there an acknowledgement there from Phil that perhaps the decision in the first place maybe wasn't the right one?
I think we both always have been very grown up in our relationship with each other. It doesn't matter sometimes whether you like a decision that someone's taken. The most important thing about a decision is that it's made honestly and openly. And it hurt me a lot to leave in 2015. I hated the relegation year. Maybe I didn't take enough responsibility for that relegation year. Maybe inherited a squad and I maybe handled it badly. Maybe I didn't do enough with that squad. Maybe I got it completely wrong that year. It was really difficult for me. I didn't have a vision of a team that could win with the players I inherited. And I couldn't find my way to building a vision. And it was just a dreadful experience. And I struggled a lot in that summer, having got that relegation under my belt. And I had to fight really hard with myself to find a way back the following year. But, to put in the effort I did and get to the end of that season and get in the playoffs, I was devastated when he sat in my office before the South End game and said, I'm going in a different direction. The idea that we could go up, and I wouldn't be at the helm was just mind numbing for me. But it was what it was, and what I had to respect was the honesty that he gave me in letting me know. You know, I had time to, you know, get myself sorted out. I had time to think about the future. It didn't in any way affect my motivation for the game, and I think he knew that. I think he knew me well enough to know that it wouldn't affect me. I didn't speak to anyone about it. I just got on with it, and we weren't quite good enough to go up. I think in many respects, I'm glad the club didn't go up, because it would have been a real struggle. That squad wasn't the previous squad that had gone up, and it was, you know, we did brilliantly well to get in there, and we just weren't ready to do the job. So I was pleased with the bounce back, gutted to be going, but on reflection, you know, I totally get it. If you're the chairman and you've got a chief executive who, you know, for whatever reason decides that he wants, you know, an excellent England international to come in and head the club up, and, you know, he can see all sorts of commercial opportunity in that, I totally get that a chairman might make that decision. I totally understand it. You've got that chief executive in there to build the commercial side of the club. Sure, we don't like it when commercial drives football, but it is one, you know, football business is about commercial and football and bringing them all together. So as much as I didn't like it, as much as it didn't suit me, I did respect it even at the time. And as I got my head around it in the months afterwards, you know, it was what it was. And, you know, it wasn't as though it happened to me mid-contract. It happened to me right bang at the end of my contract. And we moved on. And, yeah, Phil and I, you know, have always found it easy to communicate. He's got rid of me in 2006. We came back and had a second spell together and worked really well together. I left in 2012 to go to Preston, and you know, he took that hard, I think. But in the end, we've always been able to move beyond the personal dimension, and I love working with him. He's a really ambitious chairman. He lets you manage the football club. He lets you do your job, and that can't be said for every football management job that you have. But he really does let you manage the football club. He lets you do your job. He lets you sign your players. He lets you pick your team. And they're really nice things for me as a manager. I like to be given the responsibility to do my job properly, and you get that here. So,
do you ever wish, and you're going to say no, do you ever wish you'd not gone to Preston then?
No, there you go, I knew he'd say that.
Do you not think we would have gone up?
Yeah, if
we'd have stayed.
I do, yeah. And you know, it's a really selfish answer, but it's just an honest answer. I did feel as though I felt we could go up that season. I also thought that it would be end of the road for that team. I think that lads like Bostwick were always going to move on. I felt that he wouldn't have been the only one. I think if that team had got promoted to the Championship, you'd have found a clamour for our players. You'd have seen that squad decimated. I don't, the club wouldn't have been able to stand in the way of the lads moving on. I think it would have been a nasty experience in the Championship.
You still took a few of those players to Preston though.
Yeah, I took Moose, I took Lairdy, Beardo,
yeah.
And Joel.
Joel, yeah.
So, yeah, four of those went on to Preston. But, you know, they were out of contract lads. And that's what I'm saying. I think those players had earned the right to bigger clubs. And some of them were hanging off signing new contracts. That squad was going to move on. So, yes, I think we might have gone up, but I think we were at the end of an era. That squad was going to go in its own directions. And it wasn't to say I wasn't up for the fight or the challenge, but I kind of felt as though I'd earned the right as well to have a crack at something bigger. It's a shame that it was such a difficult job, but then you only get given jobs really when there's a difficulty. And it was a really, really difficult job. I didn't quite crack it, and I came back down to Stevenage. I think, you know, me coming back with my tail between my legs, and that confusing feeling of being in Deepdale with 20,000 supporting you, and then the next minute being at Broadhall Way with, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 behind you. It's a really confusing feeling to, you know, feel like the king of the castle, and then to be really, instead of being the sort of like the big gun in the league, you're suddenly the small gun in the league again. And I didn't deal with it very well. I did come back and flop. So, you know, it was a chasing an experience. That it was difficult to do, difficult to face. But I'm glad I went. I will never regret managing the first double winning club in the country. It was an amazing football club, steeped in history, great stadium, incredible fan base of a completely different type to Stevenage, but an incredible fan base. And it's an experience that I'll always cherish.
I don't think you ever got the credit that you deserved after leaving there as well, because you had a certain job to do there, didn't you? Because they were, how can you say, they had big money players in there, didn't they? And you had to go in there and you had to cull the budget.
Yeah, it was a tough job. I had a lot of money to take out the payroll, £5 million or so out of an £8 million payroll. It's not a small amount of money, and you know, some big managers had been in there and failed. Phil Brown was there before me, and he couldn't get them winning. Darren Ferguson was there before Phil, he couldn't get them winning. My loss record was much better than either of those two, so arguably I made some progress. I cut the wage bill massively, and I actually got my team playing some great football. We came to Stevenage and won 4-1. We were playing some really good football in the early part of that season. And isn't it always the way that a manager, when he fails, talks about injury? But we played one night at home to Notts County, and I lost Keith Keane, my right back, and Lairdy, my left back, to a broken leg and a cartilage in the same game. Moose did his hamstring. Lee Holmes ran into an advertising board and ripped his leg open. Bevan, who I just signed, had got injured. And I went from having an 11 I really believed in that was causing sides a real problem, to having seven of them in the treatment room. And I then had to bring in squad men who'd not been really used that season. And I struggled to get that squad winning me games. And I think 5 or 6 games we went without winning a game, and that was just too much at Preston for them to bear. So, you know, it wasn't as though we were going to go down, but, you know, we were in that sort of mid-table area, and they expected to go up despite all the cuts. I got it, I understood it, I took it on the chin. But yeah, you know, you can look at anything, can't you? Say if they'd have given me another month or another 6 weeks or whatever, maybe I'd have turned it back on its head if my lads had come back from injury. But it is what it is. I still, you know, as difficult an experience as it was, I loved every minute of it.
So since Dino's been at the club, have you spoken much to him? Beginning of the season, or do you, as football managers, do you just
not at all.
Let people get on with it?
Dino and I worked together last, I think, at Newport. And I'd had a break in the meantime where I'd worked with Grant at Peterborough. And Grant was a very different type of coach. He was obviously an international footballer, had his own ideas. Peterborough is a different type of club. That was an interesting club to work for, in a really positive way. And I learned a lot from working with Grant. I learned a lot from working at Peterborough. And when Dino and I came back together, I think it was clear quite early on that he was ready for his own gig. And you know, when someone's ready for their own gig, it's difficult for you then to carry on working together. And I think it was right that Newport was our last sort of turn together. He was going to go in his own direction, which he did, going to Nuneaton and then obviously coming in here. And you know, I'm not somebody who really spends a lot of time talking to other managers. I'm more focused on, you know, myself, my team,
us,
my management team, our football club, and you guys. yeah, that's right.
Still getting a bit too serious.
What have you made of that? You obviously follow Stevenage. What did you make of that sort of opening 7 games? Didn't score for 5, then a draw, and then, you know, that Cheltenham was his last game. And were you sort of then thinking, oh, I could go in there and do a job?
It's a funny business when you're out of work and you're looking at things. Stevenage is probably one of the very few things that I would do. You get to a point in your life, I think, where things are more or less attractive. I really wish I hadn't gone to Newport. It wasn't a job when it came up that I wanted to do. Flinney rang me and said, look, you know, we've had your name recommended to us by an agent who you worked with, one of his players at Peterborough. He said you made a massive difference to the club. We'd really like to speak to you. And I went down begrudgingly, is that the right word? Yeah. It was a bit begrudging, really. I went down to meet them just because they were so they showed so much perseverance to speak to me.
Yeah.
I went down and met them, and you know, I got the impression from meeting them that, you know, they had access to the Welsh FA's HQ for a training facility, and You know, I kind of maybe I conned myself that, you know, there was something to be done there. But I found it a really, really difficult job, and the club was, you know, very scant in terms of resource to support you as a manager. They, you know, they weren't flush at all in any regard. There was no, the secretary was a part-time man who gave his all, but you know, he was a part-time resource, and everything around the club was a state of readiness that was very different from anything I'd been used to. And I found myself as the sort of manager of everything, and in the end I brought Alex in. Alex came in as club secretary, and I'm sure Alex will tell a similar story. It was a very sort of underdeveloped infrastructure, and it was hard work. The training facilities were really difficult, the playing facilities were really difficult. We're playing on a rugby pitch, the type of football you could play was very different, and I really struggled with it. I found it really hard work. Had an incredible January. The signings of people like Ryan Bird and Mark O'Brien and Mickey Demetriou and David Pipe and Mitch Rose and so on and so on. I mean, I signed 14 players. Those signings, when they eventually got fit, were the reason they stayed up.
So still there, some of them, aren't they?
I had an incredible January, and you know, it wasn't easy to get the team winning after I made all the signings, because lads like Dimitri were still 5 weeks away from being fit. I signed him knowing that if I could get him fit over 5 weeks, he would be a good player that would drive points out towards the end of the season. I remember presenting a strategy to the club members at one stage, where I said, you know, it's the only way I can see the club staying up is to go and sign a load of players who probably aren't going to play for 4 or 5 weeks, and you're going to think I'm mad, but by the time we get them fit, we might have a team at the end of the season that can win games. So this is going to be a back end of the season strategy. And I left that team in the hands of Flinney when I went, and they managed to stay up. So it was, but you know, I'd done jobs like that, and I think I wished I hadn't done it. I say that respectfully to them as a club, but I just didn't enjoy that period of my life. So the job I would do would always be one that I think suited me, fitted with me, and Stevenage is a place I know really well.
Right, going to hand over to Mark Hollis now, because this is his little section of the show.
Undermine it.
Well, yeah, we don't know much about it, do we?
Well, it's not a new game. We're not having a new game today.
What are we doing?
Go on, take it away.
We're having. What was the theme tune?
I don't know.
I can't remember what I came up with.
Zed Cars.
This is 4 years.
No. It's only originals. No. We only do originals.
Oh, I've probably got a recording of it somewhere.
I think there is one somewhere. Yeah. Right, it is. Old Toffee episode 66. Steve and Dean and Graham, if you'd like to play.
Go on.
Guess the team of a game what happened years ago.
Oh, what's the game?
It just rolls off the tongue.
What's the game?
It just rolls off the
tongue. Yeah, what game are we going to pick the team from?
The game we are picking the team from is April the 14th, 2015. Or 2015, actually. I hate people now. It's 2000. Stevenage 1, Portsmouth 0.
Oh. It's not the one I was thinking of then.
2015.
Just before the playoffs.
Yeah, you were the manager, remember?
Tuesday night game, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, I've got the date.
You've copied and pasted a Borough Guide.
Oh, God.
This is all from Borough Guide. I have a list of
18 players? Or was he short that week? Did he have just 17?
18 players.
You don't know the 11. Is it 11?
I've got 11. I know the subs, and I know which subs came on.
Uh-huh. Daisy would have been in goal.
And I would just say, hang on. That's been a while, isn't it? Yeah, that's been a while.
I'll take it, Groves go first.
Right. I've got 17 names. We must have been in trouble because you made a double substitution in the 57th minute. I know that much. So. Of the 18 names, gentlemen, I will start with our guest.
So how many can Graham
name? How many do you think you can name?
Oh, I don't know. 7.
Oh.
Okay.
You're going to go eight?
I mean, the old Graham Wesley would have backed himself way more than that.
You don't want to show off too much.
The old Graham would have said 15.
I can't remember who played at Northampton a couple of days ago.
I'll say I'll name 8 then.
Oh, thanks. All right, so I'll name nine then.
We don't have to.
You can butt
out. You can say six.
You don't have to play.
If they both get it wrong, you might come into your own. All I would say is don't hide your
right
under a bushel, Steve.
I'll say I'll name four.
Oh, that's a bit silly, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't
have
done
that. So can you beat me? Can you go...
So Dean reckons he can do eight.
Can you do nine?
Are you happy to try nine, or do you want to give him the opportunity to do his eight?
What, you go first, do you?
Yeah. If he wants to do eight, if he doesn't get to eight, you get to go from wherever he got to up to your seven.
So this nine, does it include subs? Or
Yeah, there's 18 players, yeah.
Eight, so I just need to name nine of the 18?
Yeah.
Oh,
I love nine of the 18. Yeah, I love nine of the 18.
Right. He's got his poker face off as well. Look at him. He's deadly confident.
He's not deadly confident at all.
Right, Graham Wesley. Stevenage 1, Portsmouth 0. I need nine of the 18.
So
you've got Daisy already.
Daisy. Then at that stage, I think I was playing Andy Bond at right back.
You were.
You wouldn't have got that one, would you?
No.
I can't remember whether Wellesley was playing, but I'm going to go Wellesley.
Yeah.
And then Bira Dembele was playing.
Yeah.
Left back was Jerome Akimo playing. Right?
He's gone across the back line.
Really?
Yeah.
He's getting like that old team, isn't he?
Did you? Simon Walton might have been playing. I can't remember if he was injured or not at that stage, Simon. I'm going to go Simon Walton.
Yeah.
Then Parrott probably was.
Yeah.
Seven.
Yeah. I hate playing this game with you.
Ooh.
I couldn't name it. I couldn't name nine of this 18. I've got them printed out in front of me.
I can't remember whether Bruno Andrade was starting, but I bet he was in the 18.
Yeah. He came on in the 81st minute.
Okay.
And that was 9 minutes too many that he played for us.
I reckon Chris Welkdale might have played.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the nine.
Well done.
I don't know why we play with him.
Keep going.
I'm not sure I've got much more.
Well, Beardo must have been playing.
Beardo must have been in there.
Beardo was in there.
Beardo, yeah, would have been leading the line probably. Tom Pett might have been out there.
Tom Pett was out there.
And
so that's the 4-4.
Craig Reid?
No.
Reading wouldn't have been there.
We need one more of the starting lineup, don't we?
Yep.
The other striker.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know if there was a striker being played. Or
Parrott was another of
the
midfielder.
Who would have been playing through the middle with Beardo? Because we had Knox. I know we got to a point in that playoff campaign where we didn't have any strikers at all in the South End game. I can't think of...
Or centre-halves.
No, go on. Darris had moved on.
Tom Conlon.
I was playing him out on the right, wasn't I? He was coming in off the right hand side.
Any more from the bench? Shall I read them out?
Go on.
Sam Besant.
I would have got Sam, yeah.
I gave you the opportunity.
Anyone else you want to get?
When it got to nine, I think I switched off.
Anyone else you would have got before I tell you?
No, go on.
Harry Worley. Worley.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he's just come back, hasn't he?
Charlie Lee came on in the 57th minute.
Yeah,
with Keith Keane.
Should have got Charlie.
Keith Keane.
Keane was here on loan, that's right.
Ronnie Henry on the bench.
Was he?
And Dino's old housemate, Dippo.
Ah!
Who's that?
Dippo.
Oh, wow.
And that's your 18. Another brilliant edition of Stephen Dean guest team for Game What Happened Years Ago.
I'm glad I didn't even have to contribute
to
that.
Just to clarify, did I win?
Yeah, you always do.
Yeah, we'll clarify that one. Yeah, you won.
I nearly threw a curveball in and picked like a Darren Sahl 11.
He'd have still got it. He'd have gone goalkeeper to right back, across the centre of defence to left back.
Yeah. Right. Well played. And that was an 82% winner in the poll I put out earlier for which game would people prefer, that or Play Your Cards Right. So Play Your Cards Right has been chalked off for all future episodes in place of my new feature, which will be
coming
soon.
Graham, what is the potential of Stevenage as a club? Now, the last 10 years has seen Stevenage get promoted and gone up to League One, verge of Championship, and come back down again. Have they kind of reached a level, or can it be taken on? And I'm it's not just the playing side of things, is it? Because it's what's happening around the town as well, and the fans getting people back in. It's the whole infrastructure of the club. It's heading in the right way. We're still not filling that ground. Can Stevenage sustain football at a higher level without the kind of backing from the town itself?
I think history is always a good guide as to the future. And if you look at history, you've got clubs like Yeovil, Burton, that have shown the potential for Stevenage. I think it's realistic for Stevenage to get to the Championship. And as you said just now, we could have got there previously. Mm. It could have happened. But you've got to get, it needs to be a perfect storm. A lot's got to be right for a club like a Yeovil, Burton, a Stevenage to get to the Championship. When a club like a Yeovil or a Burton gets to the Championship, they quite often struggle for the reasons that I outlined. You know, you're going to get your Luke Ayling taken by your Leeds United if you're Yeovil. And unfortunately, you just can't replace players of that calibre that quickly when you're a Yeovil, because you know, there's other Championship clubs want those players before you, and they've got so much more to offer. So we know what Stevenage can achieve. Stevenage can easily, you know, get to the Championship if it has a perfect storm and if it gets a lot right. So that's a given. In terms of there needing to be some sort of like changes and developments, well, I think the club's made some really positive advancements. If you look at, you know, whether you like the new badge or you don't like the new badge, you like
Hollystone
kits or you don't like the new kits.
I don't.
I mean, everyone's going to have their own view on all that stuff. I when I first managed a football club, I managed Kingstonian, and I remember as the manager expressing a point of view that the club should rebrand and call itself Kingston Football Club. I didn't like the onion bit on the end of it. I thought it sounded more like a sort of an old boys club. And I expressed a view, young fool I was, that Kingston Football Club was a better route forward. And I remember Jack Goodchild, who, you know, they named Jack Goodchild Way after Jack. He was that entrenched in the club's history. Jack Goodchild going from being my greatest supporter, loving the fact we'd just beaten Yeovil away 3-2 at their place. My greatest supporter became my arch enemy. He thought I was the Antichrist trying to destroy his football club. And so I learned a long time ago not to get involved in things like badges and kits and so on and so forth, and names and all that sort of stuff, because it runs too deep in a football club.
You did it at Farnborough as well, didn't you?
Oh, listen, I've learned a lot of lessons. I'm a more mature person now. there's no point getting older if you don't get
change colours. If I remember rightly,
I did change colours. We won the league title after I changed colours.
but that worked then.
Yeah, some things do, don't they? but it's you know, I don't really get involved in all that side of things. But what you can see is that, you know, generally speaking, it's like I was saying with Teddy just now. You know, the club was trying to move in a direction where maybe they brought that international appeal to the football club. You know, if that goes in a slightly different direction, and maybe, I don't know, who's to say, suppose that international footballer brings Saudi money into the club, and suddenly the club goes in a Bournemouth direction. Mm. You know, maybe then people are going, well, that was a wise move, getting Wesley out, getting Sheringham in. Yeah, maybe it's a wise move. So when things don't work out, it's easy to be critical of it. Mm. But, you know, there's always the possibility that something good might come of a change. So I think, you know, you have to be like fair about that kind of thing. And I just think the club's gone in the right direction in so many ways. I love the changes to the North Stand. I think it's a really positive thing. It makes the ground feel more complete. Yeah. You know, even the fascia that went on the ground, a few years back now. It's a really tidy facility. The academy is growing, going from strength to strength. The first team training ground is a lovely facility. There's so much in place at the club. In the years I've been a part of the club, I've seen it grow and change so much. So, you know, it's definitely in a stronger position now, off the field, infrastructure-wise, than it's probably ever been. It's just a question of getting the club back together on the pitch and getting that winning mentality and that winning vibe going, and making sure that we probably learn, you know, lessons that we've learned before, but, you know, bed them into the way the club is run on the pitch. And there's no reason in my mind why the football club can't make the step forward into League One again. And with a fair wind, if we get a lot right, compete at the top end of League One and potentially hit that Championship. I don't know whether, I hate putting a ceiling on anything, but history says it's probably the ceiling for a Burton or a Yeovil,
unless you like a Bournemouth, you go and get that, you know, significant backing. So, you know, even if you get to the Championship, who knows what's possible? You never know what somebody might do, what somebody might choose to do with Stevenage, you know, if that winning momentum, you know, starts up again.
3 years from now, we're on the edge of the League One playoffs. Do you go to no Preston again?
No, I wouldn't. No, I said to the chairman when I came back that that's just not on my agenda. I'd love to take this club into the Championship. It would be a dream come true to help the people of this football club realise that dream. We got really close last time round, and it's funny, I never thought that me leaving for Preston would hurt people in the way it did. It didn't cross my mind that I would get anything but well wished as I left. Really didn't. I'd put my heart and soul in for however long it was, 3.5 years. We'd gone from being, you know, in the conference to having a couple of goes at Wembley, winning a trophy at Wembley, winning two promotions. We're in the top six in League One. I just won at the Medeski Stadium and put the club into the fourth round of the cup. And I just expected to be well wished out of the door. And I was shocked by the reaction, really shocked from players, shocked from fans, shocked from the club. I was so shocked that I didn't get well wished out the door. I hated the feeling that there was a problem between me and Stevenage, because it was my life and soul. It was in my heart. So yeah, I found it really difficult going before. But
I think it was because we didn't think it was ready to be over.
No, it probably wasn't. But in life, I think sometimes you get opportunities, and as a manager, it's really, really difficult. Those opportunities, they come round here and there, and they're moments in time, and you know, you have to be brave enough sometimes just to take them. And I think if I hadn't seen the end of the road for that team, I could see the end of the road for that team. I think I knew, even, like, you know, I say it now, and I said it at the time, we were just one injury away from the momentum, the wheels falling off. If I'd lost, you know, I respect all my players. If we'd lost Michael Boswick back then, I think we'd have lost something huge to what we were. And I knew in my mind we were one knock away from the wheels coming off in any event. So it was, and that's not, that really is no disrespect to any player. I just think there was a position in that team that I didn't really have any other way of dealing with it. If I lost a Roberts or I lost an Ashton, vital players, I could drop Boswick back, but I couldn't really do anything about that Boswick position in the middle of midfield. So, I knew we were vulnerable. I knew that we were, you know, just that one knock away. But it hurt me a lot. So, simple answer to your question, there's a very long-winded way of answering it. No, I wouldn't walk away again. It would be really important to me to finish the job in the right way.
We're approaching the hour mark, so we are going to have to. We're going to have to hurry things along. Have you got questions? Because
I have got some questions. I think a lot of what's been sent in. Sorry if I haven't read your name out to the three people that are listening. There's someone here that I think you might answer, and there's someone here that I don't necessarily think you will.
No, I'll go for him. Go on.
And then I've got maybe another little game just for you that I've just thought of.
Well, our last game was just for him, wasn't it?
Right, that one's going last. Right, Bulldog Borough, some short, maybe quick fire questions. Best player you've ever managed?
Really difficult question, because I've had some incredible players at this club. And I'm going to answer Stevenage-wise. Mark Roberts was an incredible captain for this football club.
Correct. Next.
Properly.
Oh, sorry.
Chris Beardsley was hugely underestimated as a footballer.
Yeah.
But he was a real champion off the pitch.
Is there our texting when you came back?
Excuse me. Let me finish. Oh,
I beg your pardon.
That's how he talks to Ben Kennedy. Things
changed at the club when Darren Murphy signed. He was part of us going 24 games unbeaten, and he brought a certain mentality to the club that I think was vital. I think a lot of players learned from
Darren Murphy.
Huge player.
Yeah. He was here last week.
Ronnie needs a mention, because he was a total stalwart, and you always knew what you were going to get with Ronnie. And that level of consistency spread into other people. Lairdy, just because you can't underestimate the thrust that that kid gave to our team, both in a defensive and attacking sense. And I mentioned Bostwick just now. You can't let me mention any Stevenage team without mentioning Boz. He made a huge difference to everything we did. But probably of all of those that I've just mentioned, I couldn't not mention Chris Day, because there is a brain that sowed so many positive seeds throughout the camp and gave us so much experience. And I've started, and I haven't mentioned Massino's goal got us into
League
One.
Do you want to play the game that's going to do first? Because my game I was going to play is
Team of the Decade.
Team of the Decade. We've just put out a Team of the Decade.
Oh, wow. Well,
we'll maybe let you think about that. So, one. But
yeah, that was it, wasn't it? Pretty much.
It's a bit cruel that, because I haven't mentioned some lads there who played for the club, but not under me, and I don't know enough about. But you know,
don't
lots
about
of the Goddens who, you know, scoring goals at higher levels, who clearly were, you know, very very good talents who came through. So it's a bit unfair for me to call the Team of the Decade, because I'm going to.
All right, we won't play that game.
I've given you a few clues as to boys that really did make a difference.
So back to the question then: best player you've ever managed. So the following question.
I think Bozzy's coming out of that.
The following question is: favourite player you've ever managed.
That wouldn't be the answer would be the same for me. I mean, I don't look at boys and think, you know, they're a favourite because, you know, on a personal level I like them better than the next man. I treat players with a sort of an even hand. And I don't have a sort of like personal favouritism towards them. I just like players who go in shirts and give me winning performances.
Okay. Player that's improved the most under you?
Do you know a player who I think improved a lot under me was Stacey Long. I think Stacey made some really important and really telling contributions for us. And I think he grew hugely as he went from being a central midfielder, which he was at Ebbsfleet, out onto the left-hand side. He really evolved his understanding of the position, of getting in behind the front off the left-hand side, and his work ethic and his contribution to the side defensively went to a completely different level. I remember sitting in a team room showing him footage of him missing a tackle at some stage, and I must have repeated it 10 or a dozen times, and I was trying to bore him, I think, into making sure that he never had to watch himself do that again, and he didn't. He was a really smart lad, Stacey, and I think he made some real strides.
Thanks. Player you've most regretted letting go or not hanging on to?
I don't really ever have regrets. If I make a decision at a moment in time, I do it for all the right reasons. I try to make sure the decision is thought through, rounded, and once I come to a conclusion on something, I don't take decisions lightly, so I don't really ever regret them. I can't think of too many players who've moved on and done.
What about ones you've signed?
What players I've regretted signing? nothing springs to my mind really.
I'll text you them later.
Yeah. Can you think of one that you'd
Jack Jeb?
You used to bring in
Jack Jeb.
No, Jebby. I believe Jebby.
Yeah, you took him to Newport, didn't you?
Yeah, I was talking about Jebby earlier on today. Yeah. Jeb's got some.
It's January.
Not with me, I'm sure.
No, he's got some incredible talent, Jeb. And I don't think he's fulfilled his potential. Mm. And I had him here, and I had him at Newport, and I let him go at Newport. So, you know, obviously I gave up on him, but Jack Jeb's got talent that is unrealised.
Is that an attitude thing?
No, I think he's a victim of the academy structure. I just think that sometimes the academy structure gives you too much too young, and I think that they don't learn the hard knocks that you have to take to get to the top, and they don't learn to listen enough, I don't think. I don't think they're used to criticism. I think they find criticism really hard sometimes because it's not part of the academy way. And I think you know, they don't learn to learn quickly enough, and I think that was Jack's problem for me, was that he just didn't learn to learn quickly enough. He found criticism a knock to his confidence rather than a guidance, and But yeah, I still to this day, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody said, "Oh, Jack Jebb's suddenly come of age." It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, I've got one more question, but I think we'll close on it.
Well, I think it's important. I want to ask that one.
Go on then, because I know the answer to that. But go on.
Do you care if we become hated again?
I think every football club has got its haters. I think there'll always be, you know, I'm not sure that Stevens and Woking are ever going to get on terrifically well, are they? and I think there's always going to be people out there who hate you. There's always going to be people who scream out that, you know, Graham Wesley's sides have drinks breaks. There's always going to be
59 minutes on New Year's Day, wasn't it? They must have been gasping.
There's always going to be, you know, people out there who dislike you. The more you win, the more people dislike you. The more you win, the more people get jealous. The more jealous people get, the more they hate you. There's always going to be passion in football, and there's always going to be dislike and disdain. I don't actively go out to be disliked. I don't actively go out for us to be hated.
Has it ever got to you?
No.
And away teams?
No. No. I mean, I'm one of these people who, in this day and age where we hear about abuse and, you know, bad names meaning so much. My mother brought me up to believe that sticks and stones break your bones and names will never hurt you. Mm. I know there's adverts out there saying, you know, sticks and stones break your bones, but names do hurt you. And I don't want to get involved in that debate. I was brought up in a certain way, and maybe I've just got a thick skin, but whatever people say to me is just fuel to my fire. If they call me a bad name, then, you know, I just get on with life and I want to win as much, whatever they call me. So it doesn't really affect me, it doesn't really hurt me. It's not an invitation to people to be rude and abusive. My kids don't like it when they hear stuff being shouted in my direction, but I'm pretty broad shouldered, so it's not really an issue to me.
Can your kids hear it for all the medals?
Is that the last question?
No.
Last night,
sorry about that, Graham. We had to bring it back.
I was listening last night to Alan Sugar being interviewed by Piers Morgan. I don't know if anyone saw it, and Piers Morgan spent the whole of the evening trying to make Alan Sugar cry, and Alan Sugar dealt with it very, very well, and I think Piers Morgan probably did come closer to crying in the end than Alan Sugar, but I expect it from Mark, and I love him. it's his way of feeling good about himself. I've got no problem with
it. People still bring it up. And people, who was the player recently that bought
Tom Pope?
No, it wasn't. It was a player that obviously you had at Preston, and he told a podcast that he had him out doing the imaginary weights. That was brilliant.
Right.
So when he'd done that already down at Bradbury?
I don't know. I hear stories about myself that I don't even remember. So people tell me I did things, ask me why I did it. I don't even remember doing it. So I'm sure some of it might be true. I'm sure some of it's exaggerated. I don't care. So some of the stories make me laugh. I make myself laugh sometimes.
That one made us laugh.
What was that? I'm never going to remember it. What was the story he told us in his office at Bray Brian that day about talking to players come into the office, getting them to do something when they come in, doing a press up or something like that, or doing something silly in the room? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I do.
Is that repeatable?
That's true, obviously.
I think that was a little bit of banter. I'm not going to say where at what club I was at. I'm not going to name the player, but I think I'm talking about a story where I said to a player I was recruiting that I needed to see what sort of character they had, and that the best way of assessing the character involved them playing the part of an animal from the zoo. And I can remember having a lad in my office. I think he was he a giraffe or? And I remember him wiggling his arm as a giraffe and making the giraffe noises, and he actually signed for me, so he must have been up for it. But
it's January, folks. Get ready for your farmyard animal impressions when you come to meet the gaffer.
Yeah, I did have a little bit of fun for my own.
There's nobody else in the room.
Yeah, that's one of my favourites.
We need
stories.
To bring a bit of fun back, Gaffer. That's what we need.
We do.
Wing games is of course to start, but you know.
Yeah, but chicken or egg. if we love winning and winning's fun, do you start winning or do you start having fun? If you start having fun, maybe you start winning. Mm. Or maybe it's like all part of the same thing. I think you do have to wear a smile when you're playing football. You've got to work real hard to win football matches.
Yeah.
But if you're not enjoying it, if the lads aren't out on the training ground on a Friday morning having a game of head tennis and a bit of banter, then they've got much less chance of turning up on a Saturday and winning the football match.
You remember 2 minutes to win it, where I think Stacey Long dressed up as you and Ben May dressed up as Stacey Long, didn't he, I think? And that was, you know.
Yeah, my fave in 2 minutes to win it was John Ashton when he got the eggs. He sat three lads down and said, there's 100 quid each if I can smash two eggs on your head. And they all sat down in a row and he smashed an egg, smashed an egg, smashed an egg. And they went, go on then, do the second one. He went, nah.
Right, last question. Oh, no, sorry, Steve.
Is it a question to go out on? Oh, no, I've got one as well.
Well, this one's a bit of fun and an olive branch from my point of view.
So go on. No, go on, you go with that.
So I've got a question from my mate, Reese. What are you laughing at?
Did you say your mate?
Your mate.
Which one of the hosts of Old Toffee would you most trust to be your assistant? And you can't say none of us.
Ooh. So he'll say all of us.
He'll say all of us, and he'll say a strength of all of us that we would bring, and then not pick one.
That's a devastatingly difficult question.
Right, come on then.
Well, picking the best of a bad bunch, I appreciate.
No, I love you guys, you know that. And you know full well I'm never going to pick between you. You're all so very different. Hollis...
That's what makes this the best podcast.
Hollis has annihilated me probably as much as anybody in this football club over the years. And what I like about Mark is that he can tell you some horrible, dreadful, violent home truths. And yet... you can still be there with him all these years later,
yeah.
Shake his hand and regard him as a friend. And I think that honesty is really important in a dressing room. So players need to be told the truth, and you need someone around you who can get the truth out there, however much it might hurt them. But there needs to be that human side that says, I've told you the truth, now I'll treat you as a man and deal with you as a man. And I think that's a really important characteristic. So I like that.
I was very young though, when I think, in my defence, I was very young and opinionated when I was horrible to you.
Yeah, but
or about you.
But I think that's good.
I think it's good. Probably wasn't done in the most constructive way.
No, but you said it from your heart, and I like that. I'm right. Cool with people who've got a point of view. Okay. So it's like Ben Kennan, isn't it? People can fall out with Ben. I used to like you for your honesty. So I listen to people. People tell me what I don't want to hear. I listen to it and think, oh, has he got a point of view? Is he right? Is there something I can learn from that? So. That's what I think. I think you've got a very good knowledge, Steve, of you'd be the man who could point me towards a player here or a player there, somebody would remember a tactical situation in a game, somebody, you've got good insight. So you'd be the person who'd probably stop us making stupid mistakes from a set piece that the opposition had. So you've got a good knowledge base that I could tap into. Mm-hmm. And then Dino's
got nothing.
Got a good punchline.
Dino's the guy who is happy to be a team player and fill in the gaps. He's not got a huge ego that needs to be out there. He's happy. No. He's present. Yeah. But he's happy to fill in the gaps. He's happy to have a Steve and a Mark having their little bang, bang, bang. And then he's happy to be the bloke who brings a bit of peace and builds the team. So I think there's a good sort of all-round knowledge in Steve, and there's a good team player in Dino. I think there's a lot of honesty in Mark. And I actually think that it wouldn't be a bad dugout. With me leading you three, I think we might be in business.
So when do we start?
Yeah.
For 35 grand a year, you could have all three of us.
I don't know who's going to go on with the magic sponge there.
So who would be the aggressor? You need to have a Dino character there. Yeah? You'd be the right-hand side of the dugout.
Yeah, the trouble is, though, unless they were reading my Twitter timeline, they wouldn't get much out of me.
Do it by Twitter.
We'd have to get a big screen set up.
Do it by Twitter.
I've got one final question, and there's been a lot of talk on Twitter, between fans, on forums, social media, about the way things have gone. What would your message be to the fans at the moment? Because some of them are pretty much down in the dumps.
Are they?
Yeah, very much so.
I'm not down in the dumps. I've had 900 odd games in a dugout. I've been with a lot of teams over a lot of years, and I've won most of my games. So, if anyone was going to be down in the dumps and you should be worried about it, it would be me. I'm not down in the dumps. We're clearly not right. The club's not been winning football matches, not been scoring goals, not been winning football matches, so we're clearly not right. But I'm not down in the dumps. So I would just say to them, just trust what I'm doing. I'm going to make some changes to us. I've got to change one or two things behind the scenes. I've got to change one or two things playing wise. I've got to make sure I slim down the squad. But we'll get ourselves to winning soonest. You ask for patience as a manager, and I think you can be shown too much patience in short-term situations. But I do need to just get through this little Christmas period, get one or two things sorted out, ironed out, and I'm confident this group of players can get to winning in the not-too-distant future. And I say that, we've got a game tomorrow, so you're not going to want to hear me saying in the not-too-distant future. I'm looking at tomorrow's game, and I'm expecting to win the game. I know it's not going to be easy. I know that they're flying quite high, but so are Forest Green. Mm. And we were, almost more than a match for them. Mm. Gave ourselves a chance to win the game. We came on strong in the second half. So I'm going into tomorrow's game knowing that, okay, the side's not been winning, so there's that little confidence thing. But I think the players are more than capable of going on and getting the 3 points, even tomorrow. And with a few little tweaks, I can see us getting to a point where we can win games consistently too. So, trust in my belief in the team, because I don't come along and tell lies. If I didn't believe in them, I'd be stressing that there should be even more urgency around changing the squad round. There's some good lads there, some good players. We've got a bit of tweaking to do, but I think the fans can expect to start seeing some winning football before the month of January's out.
Okay, anything more from you two guys?
I don't think so, no.
No, I think that's good.
I think that's a good episode.
Yep. That might get people raising their eyebrows a little bit, but hopefully we'll have one or two more alutes between now and the end of the season. Whether we've got Mr. Wesley on board with us.
Route 66, that that famous west coast of America. Is it Route 66?
Right.
Isn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah. Route 66. 66 episodes.
Episode 66, Route 66. So what was the sort of like California Dreaming, is it, or something? The big song there. Polish finishes off with California Dreaming, is it?
That'd be quite nice finishing you off with anything.
Come on, give us a bit of California Dreaming.
I hate the Beach Boys. I take Noel Gallagher's view of the Beach Boys, and that they're only famous because they're next to the Beatles in HMV.
Okay, thanks to Graham. Thanks for coming in, Graham.
Thank you, lads.
It's always good to see you.
Thanks for asking us to do this, Graham, because we wouldn't have done it otherwise, would we?
We wouldn't.
Thanks for pulling us together. Thanks for making a team out of
Kermit the Frog, isn't he?
Out of a set of distant individuals, you've really pulled a team back together again. That's what we respect about you.
You three lads have been amazing for this football club over so many years. You give it an enormous amount, and you build a momentum in the fan base. You're all leaders in your own right, and the idea that you weren't as one doesn't sit right with me, so it's good to see you back together on this first edition of Love of Our Football.
That was a load of old toffee. Thanks to Graham, thanks to Dean, and Mark, it's only a badge.